Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
Okay, good morning. It's Sunday morning, the 13th of April, 2008. The 13th of April, not the 1st of April. And that makes this Solder Smoke 81. First thing I have to do this morning, guys, is take care of that delicate mid-April Solder Smoke ritual, which is me kind of, I guess, well, not really apologizing, but not really gloating either, but explaining what happened in the April 1st episode. If you'll recall, we discussed in that episode a rather miraculous radio propagation event, and that was my receiving in Rome of Michael AA1TJ's microwatt Zener diode beacon signal. You know, Michael has been Michael, the Henry David Thoreau of radio, the hero of the Hobbit Hole, has been experimenting in his underground nuclear-proof bunker in Vermont with all kinds of truly microwatt, really flea power, QR triple P transmission devices. And he's been putting a beacon on the air, and people in New England have been picking this up and sending him in reception reports. He's put some very interesting code words in the signal, and the people who get the code word then send it in, and that's confirmation. So in the last episode, I told you that through some really strange propagation quirks, I was able to pick up the signal here in Rome. It was amazing. Guys, it should have been a little bit too amazing. Somebody did the calculation. I'm not going to say who. And gave me the calculation wow, that was 40 million miles per watt. Wow. Yeah, wow indeed, especially on 80 meters. I mean, that's quite a trick on 80 meters, almost in the summertime. I suppose it's possible. And listen, don't feel bad if you fell for this one, because that's what April 1st is all about. This is an old radio tradition. I'll tell you a little bit about how old it is here in a second. But there's another reason why you should not feel bad if you were taken in by this one, and that is because as QRPers and as home brewers, we have to be optimists. So there's almost a kind of a self-selection process in this group. We are optimists because we do this. If we weren't optimists, we wouldn't do this. I mean, you have to be an optimist to think that you're going to take a handful of parts from a Radio Shack or even a handful of parts from junked old radios or junked old computers, and even without, in many cases for us, a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering, and or even without a complete understanding of the theory as learned from the ARRL publications, we are still determined to take those parts and put them together and then use them to communicate with people all around the world, using less power than is consumed by most nightlights. So, yeah, you have to be optimists here. So I think that creates a bias towards believing something like the miraculous 40 million miles per watt transatlantic crossing of the Zener diode signal. Don't feel bad about it. There's another reason you shouldn't feel bad about it, and that is, of course, because in the weeks prior to my... sorry, I've got a cold. Anyway, in the weeks prior to my reception report, I had been telling you all about the fact that I was using a really special piece of equipment here, the Drake 2B. Now this, of course, when you hear that a Drake 2B is being used at the receiving end, this, again, it creates the tendency on the part of the listener to believe that even miraculous things are possible because of the nature of the equipment. Not only that, I had recently retubed the Drake 2B. And so, I mean, you know, we're talking QRP, we're talking homebrew. You know that there's a Drake 2B that's recently been retubed at the receiving end. All these things make it possible to overlook the fact that Michael was transmitting with, what, 30 or 40 microwatts, and that it was 80 meters, that it is sort of almost summertime, and that my antenna consists of a small piece of 30-gauge wire suspended among the concrete and rebar of Central Rome. You got to believe, and obviously a lot of you guys did, so all I can say is, gotcha. Hey, listen, about this tradition, around the same time, the ARRL sends out a newsletter, and they have compiled the complete works of Larson E. Rapp, I think it's W-I-O-U. That's it. Yes, W-I-O-U, which should be a giveaway here. It says here, thanks to the efforts of ARRL volunteer Bob Allison, WB1GCM, the league has assembled the complete works of the noted QST author Larson E. Rapp, W-I-O-U, or W-1-O-U. Rapp's remarkable contributions spanned a period of more than three decades, 1941 to 1962 and 1972, primarily during the month of April. Rapp was said to be from Kippering on the Charles, Massachusetts, just off Route 128. Like most visionaries, unafraid of pushing technologies beyond conventional limitations, like Michael, and I suppose like yours truly, Larson at times was controversial among his peers and contemporaries. ARRL lab engineer Mike Gruber, W1MG, said, You can now be the judge of just how well Rapp's theorems and trademark radical approach have withstood the test of time. The first Rapp article, Putting Dynamic Prognostication to Work, appeared in the April 1941 issue of QST. In the article, Rapp expounded on his efficient one-tube transmitter. When Rapp discussed the tuning of the transmitter, he said, quote, the high coupling efficiency of the unit results in a minimum plate current resonance of about 0.9 milliamps at 7 megacycles. This is too low a value to show on the 0 to 250 milliamp meter that should have been used for the circuit, so you'll have to take our word for it. The transmitter was described as having a simple construction of the chassis, which is made from cardboard fastened by wire staples and glue. The underside is covered with tinfoil. Well, you know, I think that bit was meant to be part of the joke, but, those kind of construction techniques are more common today, and you often see these kind of things showing up in the QRP homebrew underworld magazines of the hobby. Let's see. He's got all kinds of other articles here, and it says here. A lot of this kind of thing, a lot of April. So I submit this as evidence that I, you know, shouldn't be treated too harshly here, because I'm not the only one who's doing this. This is a ham radio tradition, at least in the United States, that goes back many, many decades. So anyway, I hope we had fun with that, and I hope someday to actually receive the signals from Michael's tunnel diode transmitter. We are going to institute here at Solder Smoke an award, and it'll be given around this time each year, and we're going to call it the Iron Pyrite Award, and it'll be awarded anonymously, because the nature of the award. So some of you are in the running for this year's Iron Pyrite Award, and you know who you are. We won't say any more about that. You know, I got to say, though, that right after I did this, I started getting messages, and I realized that I got to watch my back now. I mean, I really have to be careful. And I got a message from somebody who, it was regarding my the problems that I've been having with my computer, which continued, by the way. But the message said that the guy wrote in and he said, you know, Bill, I think I know what might be wrong with your computer. There has been a wave of problems with your brand of computer, and it involves the electrolytic capacitors in there, and they were chosen from a batch that was of inferior quality, and some of them have been going bad, and so that's the actual problem with many of these computers. And you know how it is when you're struggling with a computer problem. You know, anybody comes along and tells you what might fix it, you're like you're like somebody who's drowning trying to grab onto a life preserver. You're like, yes, that could be it. It could be the electrolytics. And then I thought, whoa, hold on a second. I could just imagine this, that, you know, some guy tells me that I got to go change the electrolytics in the computer. I mean, it was okay if he told me I had to change the electrolytics in the Drake 2B or my Hallicrafters HT37. But, I mean, telling you to change the electrolytics of in the computer, well, I mean, what next? Am I going to have to change the clutch and change the oil in there too? I don't know. So I said, I sent him a message back. I said, you know, is this payback? Is this payback for April 1st? Wouldn't it be great fun for me to come on to the next show and tell everybody about my my failed adventure of changing all 47 electrolytic capacitors in the on the Pentium motherboard? But you know, it wasn't. It was real. Apparently, I checked. And unless there's truly an elaborate conspiracy out there to get me to change the electrolytics in my my computer, there actually was a problem with the electrolytics. But this just shows you how careful I have to be now. So any suggestions that come my way, at least for the next several months, and any time after about March 15th, I'm going to have to put through the iron pyrite filter here to see if we can avoid... avoid payback. All kinds of interesting stuff happening here. I'm happy to report that lots of solder smoke has been generated here in Rome in my shack. I have finally, and you guys have been hearing about this rig for a long time, finally straightened out the problems in my portable double sideband 20-meter ceramic resonator transceiver with outboard linear amplifier. I've got on my www.gadgeteer.us website, if you scroll down to 20-meter portable rig, you will find that, a description of it and pictures of it. If you want more information, there's actually a video up on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and search for M0HBR on YouTube, you'll find all the videos that I've done, and in there is one of them about the 20-meter homebrew double sideband portable transceiver. I'll give you a little background on this thing. This started in the Azores, I guess about 6-7 years ago, and I had just finished one double sideband rig for 17 meters. I was having so much fun with it, I decided to build another one, a real portable one, and this one's about the size of a bound book. It's built mostly around NE602s. It's got an unusual configuration. It's got three or four NE602s in the receiver. And I even use NE602s at one point as one of the audio amplifiers. Use it, of course, as the mixer, and even use it as the RF amplifier. So NE602s and I think one audio amplifier chip on the receive side. It's got one oscillator stage that's common to the transmitter and receiver. It was originally a crystal oscillator, a variable crystal oscillator, but then I was alerted to the wonders of ceramic resonators and changed it to a ceramic resonator crystal oscillator. I can tune from 14266 all the way up to 14322 using kind of an unusual arrangement of ceramic resonators. I found that if I put two of them, I think in I put two of them in parallel, it shifted the frequency range up by about 15 kc's, which was perfect because in one switch position I have just one ceramic resonator in there, and that gives me about 15 kc's of coverage. Then I throw the switch, and that puts a second ceramic resonator in parallel with it, and that extends the range, and now I have another 15 kc range. So I wrote it up for Spratt. It's in one of the Spratts over the last few years. And I was really happy to get something into that magazine. So I've been working on it. And then I built this outboard linear amplifier. At first I tried to use FET transistors. It didn't work out. And then I remembered that I had a little board here with an amplifier from an amplifier circuit from one of my first QRP homebrew experiments or rigs. It was a 30-meter CW transmitter from QRP Classics. Actually, it was the 6-watt VXO transmitter in that issue of QST. I had chopped the thing up and modified it and used it as a final, used the final in one of my early DSB rigs in the Azores. Well, I chopped it up and used it again and put it in this thing, and I've been spending the last few weeks in a process that I guess we could call, and it's fitting here in Rome, I sit here in Rome and say this, guys, I've been engaged in radio frequency exorcism. I am the exorcist. My job is to drive the demons out of this little rig. And it's much like the movie. It got ugly. It was really ugly at points. There were all kinds of signals floating around this thing that in no way should have been there. And I had to follow all the words of wisdom from Doug DeMaul and Wes Hayward and others in all their books. I was consulting. I was I went back and looked at articles by C.F. Rocky. At one point, Rocky, it's always one of my favorite lines, suggests that at some point it may be necessary to offer sacrifices to Papa Legba to kill some chickens. I didn't have to kill any chickens. I stuck with the more standard solutions, and I think we got it. I think I got rid of the demons in this thing. So now it's putting out a solid 2 watts. I have a little linear there. I throw the switch down, and in the down position, it's about 200 milliwatts. And if I want to go QRO, I put the switch up, and I kick in the linear, and I say, "Yeah, there. Let me kick in the linear, old man." Ka-chunk, up to 2 watts. It's awesome. I mean, I have to warn them to take off their headphones. And I use this thing to talk to the local hams. We have a net that meets every night at 8:30. We've got a really loyal bunch, and we get together every night, and mostly we discuss the problems that I'm having with my rig and my antenna. But it's great fun, and it's given me a chance to meet some really, really great local hams. And, you know, I sent an email to Wes about this, and I don't have a spectrum analyzer here. I suspect I never will. My scope is not even particularly broad bandwidth. I'm embarrassed to say. I think it's a 20 megahertz scope. I need more. So I think I will eventually get a better scope. I really should. But there's another little piece of test gear that I think most of us have in the shack that I find useful in determining whether I'm dealing with an amplifier or a transmitter that is at least somewhat close to operating the way it should be. That's the question. You know, you build something and you put it, you check it out on the dummy load. That'll get you so far. Then you actually put it in the system and you have it between the transceiver and the antenna. And you're wondering, you know, what frequency is this thing transmitting on? Which is an important question in our hobby, guys. I found that just sort of a kind of a rough guide to whether you are even in the ballpark is provided by your simple SWR meter and an antenna tuner. If you're using an antenna tuner, here's what I mean. What I do is this the rig I'm working on now is for the 20 meter phone band. I take the Heathkit HW8 and tune it up to as high as it'll go on 20 meters, which is about 14.250. I do a quick tune of the antenna and the antenna tuner, and I get it set up so the SWR is down to 1:1. So the system's tuned, and it's the antenna system is now presenting pretty close to a 50 ohm non-reactive load at that frequency, in that frequency band. Then I switch over to the newly created thing of beauty that has just come off the workbench, the hopefully 20 meter amplifier. And I put that in line, and I speak a few words into the mic and take a look at the SWR meter. Now, if that SWR meter, which had been sort of laying down there flat near the zero position, is suddenly showing really high SWR, for me, that's an indication that there are frequencies in there that don't belong there. Because if there had just been frequencies in and around 14.250, I wouldn't be seeing much SWR. However, if I'm getting SWR, it's because there are frequencies in there that are seeing that finely tuned antenna system as anything but a 50 ohm non-reactive load. Get what I'm saying here? It's I'm not going to call it a spectrum analyzer because it's not even close. It's just sort of a rough guide to whether you are close to success or close to a warning notice from the Federal Communications Commission. Anyway, that's been my technical project. The radio looks really good now. The rig looks great. It's sitting there. It's sitting up on top of the Drake 2B. I was down rummaging around in my junk box, and I found an old microphone, one of these kind of handheld microphones from an old Swan 240. And it really looks great. It's the kind of thing that, it's the kind of mic that they always had in the old ARRL, in the old handbooks, in the SSB chapter. And they always showed you an earnest young guy sitting there in front of his homebrew transceiver, speaking into a mic, no doubt, coordinating a rescue at sea or, a water drop for a forest fire or something like that. Anyway, I got this kind of mic hooked up to it, and every night at 8:30 we get on 20 meters and talk to the guys, and it's been great fun. Let's see, on my list here, Michael's Heliograph. Michael has, AA1TJ has come up with another great idea for communications, and this may launch many of us into another bout of technical hobbyism, and that's he wants to revive the 19th century art of the heliograph, and that's basically using sunlight and mirrors to communicate from mountaintop to mountaintop. Michael works up on a mountaintop in Vermont. He's in a good position to experiment with this, and I was amazed because showing the power of a QRPL, somebody came back and said, hey, look, there's already a group out there. The Boy Scouts work on this, and they actually use ham radio equipment to coordinate. So I suspect that soon we're going to be getting reports on Michael's heliograph adventures. Guys, let me tell you, there's no chance for me to get this signal here, okay? So it's not going to make it to Rome, all right? It would have to be an extremely bright light. But anyway, Michael, good luck with the heliograph. What else? I just wanted to mention here that I made a visit to IKEA not long ago and purchased some items that have changed my life in the ham shack. I just bought some simple shelves, tacked them up on the wall, and now I don't have everything all piled up on the desk. Not only that, I've invented something here, guys, that has really, really improved my workbench efficiency. I found that whenever my limited time at the workbench, I was spending an inordinate amount of it rummaging around at the desk looking for that Phillips screwdriver or those diagonal cutters or all the tools. So after I put up the shelves, I decided to get organized. Actually, it was kind of a serendipity thing, because I had bought two shelves and I put them up there, and there was this gap between them of about 6 inches or 8 inches. So I decided, hey, that's perfect. It's right in the center. It's right in front of my face when I'm working. I put a piece of kind of zip cord wire between the two shelves, and it kind of just hangs there. And on it, I hang the pliers, the diagonal cutters. What else do I got there? The wire strippers, a set of heavier pliers, tweezers, all these things that can easily hang there, all these things that you're constantly reaching for. So now what I do is I use the tool and bang, I just reach up and I hang it on the clothesline. And I'll have to take a picture of this and post it. It's a simple thing, but keeping those tools close at hand can save you an awful lot of time on the workbench. So visit that Home Depot, visit that IKEA, and straighten up those workbenches, because time is limited, and it's good to have them organized. It's really made a big difference for me. Let's see what else. Just a little thing. I cracked up. My kids watch Futurama in Italian. The poor things. We don't have a satellite TV beaming in from the English speaking world yet. I think I've lost that battle. I think it'll be here soon. But in the meantime, they've been amusing themselves every once in a while by watching Futurama dubbed into Italian. It's good. They're learning Italian. They're learning a weird vocabulary, but it's Italian. And I cracked up the other day because they were showing one of the robots. He had kind of snuck off to the side and was reading, I guess it was some form of pornography. And when they caught him, they showed what he was looking at, and it was a schematic diagram. All right, enough of that. I thought that was pretty interesting. Funny. Hey, the latest issue of Sprat came in, and man, I'm gonna have to pause here because let me pause here. I'll be right back. I'm gonna go get the Sprat because I got to talk about this. All right, I'm back. I found it. I got it. Spring 2008 issue of Sprat. Issue number 134 by the GQRP Club. They're all great. All the spreads are great. This one is particularly good. It's got on the cover a great photo of the G3 HBN 50 milliwatt transmitter used to win the G4 DQP trophy in the winter sports and described in this issue. What a great looking rig this is. It looks like a really serious business rig. It's got ammeters on there. It's got a switch. I hadn't noticed this before. It's got a switch called, one switch called net, which is the term that our British cousins use. We would usually call this, I think in the States, spot. You know, you throw the switch and it just gives you a chance to find what frequency you're on in your receiver. This is something that used to be quite common, but nowadays, with the age of transceivers, many hams wouldn't know what this is for. In the UK, they call it net. I saw that there. But he's got another switch on here that I thought was really pretty good. It's called chirp. There's a switch there for chirp. And I don't know whether this is to add chirp to the signal or to remove it. But as I said in a previous edition, I like chirpy signals because it's a sign of a home brewer at the other end. So anyway, I often kind of leaf through the pages of a new Sprat just to let you guys know what's available here. And this one's particularly good for that. The first article is a 40-meter QRSS slow-speed QRPP beacon with homebrew batteries by Hans Summers, G0 UPL. One of my big regrets in the UK was not having the chance to meet Hans. We had a couple of opportunities where it came close, but I was in the throes of moving, and it just didn't work out. But one of these days, Hans, we've got to get together. I really enjoy your articles here. Hans is he's building low power, slow speed beacons, and he wants to power them with homemade batteries. And there's a great article about all of his experiments in here. But one line just sort of captured the the flavor, pun intended here, of the project. It says here, in practice, I found that a lemon could only produce. No, let me say that again. In practice, I found that a lemon could only produce a few microamps of current, and calculated it would require 30,000 lemons with steel screw and copper wire electrodes to power my milliwatt transmitter. Hans, can we get the formula for that? The number of lemons per output watt. Is there? Have you determined the the formula? That's something that needs to be placed in the ARRL handbook, I think. But anyway, that is definitely the again the flavor of the current issue of Spratt. We move on, and there's a an all valve 40 meter sideband transmitter looking really really good by Andrew Smith G4OEP with the schematic, of course. A very simple software-defined DSB radio by Eduardo Alonso EA3GHS. DSB is always appreciated. A hand-cranked power generator power supply by Mitchell Lee KB6FPW. Always nice to see an American contribution in Spratt. Two-pin coil formers from Junk. Using really a neat idea, using the those little starters for the neon lights and using them as coil formers after taking the guts out of them. A nice idea. A wide range 3.5 megahertz VXO by Mike Rathbone, G3ZII. Very nice. VXOs are big in our world. A remote antenna switcher by David Long, G3PTU. Some notes on the Hendrix Kits BitX SSB transceiver by Nigel Flatman, G0EBQ. Good review for the Hendrix Kits BitX. And then the article on the 50 milliwatt transmitter by Jimmy Bolton, G3HBN. An interesting circuit, and I think an even more interesting front panel. I really like that. You know, in this article, here's the line that really captures what Spratt is all about and what we're all about, guys. In the article by Jimmy Bolton describing the HBN 50 milliwatt transmitter, 50 milliwatts, he's got a picture of the guts of the thing on the back. It's got that real interesting front panel. It's built on a box about the size of a Benton Harbor lunchbox. And man, you look at the back and it's really cool. It's really us. It's what we're all about here. Because it says here, I'll read you the caption. You'll have to get the magazine itself to look at the picture. But here's what the caption says: inside the transmitter, the VHO and buffers are in a little box next to that great big old-fashioned tuning condenser. The PA is underneath the chassis with its switched tank coil and one of the tank condensers. The other you can see on the top, along with the meter, 2 volts FSD, and dummy load. Now, this is the line. This is what I'm talking about, guys, here. The 6-inch nail is the drive control for the PA to keep the power at the 50 milliwatt level on all bands. And then you look up there, and sure enough, there's a 6-inch nail sticking up right prominent out of the innards of this very fine business 50 milliwatt transmitter. You know when you're writing a technical article and you use a line like, and the 6-inch nail is the drive control, well, you're a long way from plug and play radio at that point, guys, and you're into the world of solder smoke and homebrew. So thanks to the guys for Spratt for that, and especially thanks to Jimmy Bolton for the for the 6-inch nail, and all kinds of other great articles in there. It's just a wonderful magazine, and I tell you what, it's a happy day at Italy Zero / N2 CQR when a new Spratt comes in. So thanks to George and all the folks who put Sprout together for us. Let's see. I have a kind of a sad note here to mention. The ARRL. I like the ARRL newsletter. It comes into my email box, and I kind of scanned through it kind of quickly, and something caught my eye. A name, not the call, but a name. The name rang a bell, and it's an announcement of a silent key. And when I read it, I said, I recognize that name. And I read on, and let me read you the SK notice. Tim Ulick, W9QQ. The ARRL has learned that Tim Ulick, PhD, W9QQ, ex-W9MIJ, captain, U.S. Navy retired, of Schwenksville, Pennsylvania, passed away December 28, 2007, after a lengthy battle with cancer. He was 65. Ulick, an ARRL life member, also held calls V47QQ, KG4QQ, HL9QQ, and PJ9Q. In 1964, graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, Ulick served his country for 29 years. Upon retiring from the Navy, he operated Watts Unlimited, producing a lightweight, high-voltage power supply designed for use as a replacement in older amplifiers. Ulick wrote several articles for QST and QEX, including switching power supplies for high voltage, PSK-31 on the road, and a two-element vertical parasitic array for 75 meters. You know, I read that, and I what came to mind for me was another QST article, and I guess I liked it so much that I kept it. You know, most of my QST collections in storage someplace in Belgium or Beltsville, Maryland, or someplace. But I bring with me a few magazines, and I kept this one. And it's I guess I got maybe a dozen of them on the shelf over there, and this is one of them. And I open it up, and it's the November 1963 issue of QST. And on page 45, there is an article, A Handy Talkie for 7 Megacycles, a 200 milliwatt unit using 9 transistors by Timothy Ulick, W9MIJ. If you look down on the bottom of the where it gives the address for the author, the address is listed as Midshipman, United States Navy, Bancroft Hall, U.S. Naval Academy, Annapolis, Maryland. And it's got a picture there of showing this this rig that Tim designed and built using transistors in 1963 while studying at the Naval Academy. He's got it on his hand, on the palm of his hand. The entire thing fits on the palm of the hand of his hand, and he shows you the circuit. He built it into a walkie-talkie case. Let me just read you a few lines from this thing, because I think I found it really inspirational. It says here, second only to amateur radio, my fondest interest is in trout fishing in the streams of western Wisconsin. Having decided to combine the two hobbies, it occurred to me to build a station small enough that it could fit into the pouch of a pair of fishing waders and still not be of any inconvenience. After using a pair of old BC-611 surplus handy talkies for one summer, they were discarded because of their bulkiness and cumbersome batteries. It was at this time that the thought of a pair of very small transistor units such as much better substitutes occurred to me. After a week or so of breadboarding circuits and drawing a few sketches, construction was started, and two units were completed in about a week of spare time last summer. Now, this is the point that Greg gets really inspirational. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get much use out of them while at home on leave, so I took them with me to Pensacola and Jacksonville, Florida, and, with the aid of W4NEK, gave them some trial distance tests at the Naval Air Station where I was undergoing my introduction to naval aviation. Okay. Think about this. This guy is sharp enough and intrepid enough and diligent enough that while dealing with the, you know, somewhat considerable challenges that come from being a midshipman at the Naval Academy, in his spare time, he just designs, using transistors in 1963, a handy talkie for 7 megacycles. And then, by the way, he decides that in his voluminous spare time while undergoing the, quote, introduction to naval aviation at Pensacola, which I understand is a bit of a demanding course, he decides that he's going to use his spare time to test the rigs that he designed while on summer vacation. I'm sure you'll agree. I found this really really inspiring, and he's got a very very good QST article with all kinds of description of the boards and the internal layout and the whole thing. And so, well, I was sorry to hear of Tim's passing, but I thought it would be good for us to remember the great contribution that he made, and I'm sure he inspired a lot of other people. And I remember a few months later, I found another QST from early 1964 showing Tim getting an award at the Academy for the QST article. Well deserved, and 7-3 Tim, and thanks. Let's see, what else do we have? I guess it's time. We're still, you know, technically challenged. Guys have sent me the a digital version, but I just haven't. Yeah, between the computer problems and the demons inside the 20-meter transmitter amplifier, I haven't had time to cue it up. Also, some guys have sent in some band sweep segments. I apologize for not getting them on yet. I just attribute it to the computer problems. But, well, here goes. That's a pretty sad gong, but I don't think it busted any eardrums, so it'll be all right. We got some interesting mail this week. Jason, KF6PQT, thanked us for solder smoke, and he told us that it got him through a long plane trip to Hawaii. Glad we helped out with that ride, Jason. And it's always interesting to hear about people, you know, listening to solder smoke while going transatlantic or across the Indian Ocean or over Antarctica or something like that. And so, great, thanks for the message. Here's a good one. All this talk about beacons. Stan on the island of Malta has set up a beacon, and he'd like solder smoke folks to listen to it. I think it's on 24/7. The call sign is 9 Hotel 1 Lima Oscar stroke beacon. That's 9 Hotel 1 Lima Oscar stroke beacon, and it is operating on 28.224 megahertz. 28.224 megahertz. Please listen and send signal reports to Stan. If you can't get them to Stan, send them to me and I'll pass them on to Stan. But an interesting location, an interesting beacon operation. It's all homebrew, definitely QRP. So give OM Stan a listen and see if you could hear his beacon on 28.224 megahertz. Speaking of beacons, Jerry in South Dakota, NR5A, has written in, and he's listening for beacons of a different sort. He heard my comments about the SETI program, and has set up a team on the under the SETI project, where you use your computer off hours to listen for the ultimate DX. He's got an old computer. He's going to leave it on 24/7, just constantly crunching numbers for the SETI project. And he set up a team. You can set up a team and get into a competitive thing on this to see who can crunch the most data. I think I am a member of Team Italia, or was before my computer went kaput. But Jerry, I'm pleased to note, has set up a team, and of course the team name is Solder Smoke. So any of you guys out there who are in the SETI project, you might want to join the Solder Smoke team. And, well, wouldn't it be something if we were the ones, or our team, discovered the message? That would be the real miles per watt award. And I'd have a tough time convincing people that that wasn't an April Fool's joke. But thanks, Jerry, for that message. You know, we talk an awful lot about the knack here, guys, and you know, people get it. It's something you get, and you know, I guess it's there may be a genetic thing as part of it. It just you know, it's well known. It's a guy thing usually, not always, but usually, and it usually strikes it around the age of 12, 13, 14 years old. You know how it is. But anyway, I got a message from somebody who had kind of the early symptoms of the knack, didn't quite catch it completely, but then later in life had a real serious bad relapse. And he wrote to me about it, and you know, he was kind of wondering how or why this happened. The relapse occurred after he moved to a city that will be familiar to almost all of you. He got a bad case of the knack after he moved to Benton Harbor, Michigan. It's Dan, Kilo Fox 8 Zulu. Dan, what did you expect? I mean, it's like somebody with a gambling problem moving to Vegas and wondering why they had a relapse. I mean, moving to Benton Harbor, Michigan, the home of the Benton Harbor lunchbox, the home of Heath Kit. I mean, it's like, you know, I guess moving to Nashville and wondering why you've got this obsession with country music and Elvis and all that or whatever. But, okay, we're glad to hear that you've got the relapse and you have the knack. And I'm glad to know that the knack is alive and well at Benton Harbor, Michigan. Fine business, and thanks for the email, Dan. Finally, guys, we have every once in a while we get a serious, well, they're all serious, I guess. Well, no, they're not. But every once in a while we get a serious email from somebody, from a ham out there who really needs some help. We took care of Ramakrishnan's need for solid-state design for the radio amateur. Billy has just joined us in the shack.
Hello.
Hold on. Let me get him in position here. Sit down here, big guy. All right. Okay. Anyway, we got an email from Gary, Kilo Bravo 9, Zulu Uniform Victor. And Gary has been a listener of Solder Smoke for a long time, really inspired by it, really fired up, and obviously has a bad case of the knack. Gary's got a problem, and he really wants to build something. He desperately wants. I could tell from the way he wrote it in the email that he's got this urge to melt solder, to construct something, to build something. His problem is that he's completely blind, and he's looking for ideas on how he can participate in the solder smoke part of the hobby that's so important for us, for all of us. So I know of many other blind radio amateurs who have succeeded in becoming really proficient home brewers. It's really one of the most amazing achievements in the technical area. I mean, but if anybody out there has any ideas or articles or anything or websites or organizations, I know there's handy hams that might be able to help, but if anybody else out there has some specific ideas on how we can help Gary get started. You know, I was thinking about a Michigan Mighty Mite or a rig like that, or where, you know, it's a few components that can be put together easily, where you could get a good sense of the circuit just from you know, by physically feeling it. Or, you know, Manhattan, the whole Manhattan construction concept where you can actually, you'd be able to feel the isolation pads on the board. I think that would be very helpful. Gary mentions that one of his problems is that is reading the schematics. I guess that would be difficult because, of course, with text, you got all kinds of text reader programs there. But how do we get beyond the schematic diagram reading problem? Anybody has any ideas? Maybe there's some way we could print them out with raised you know, symbols on the page so that you could almost sort of like a Braille version of schematics. I don't know. There should be a way of doing this, and I'm sure somebody out there has some ideas. So send them my way, and we'll help you, Gary. We'll get you going, old man. Don't worry about it. We'll help you out. Let's see, a few other things on my list here before we sign off. On cluster maps, I always give you an update on what's happening on cluster maps. I think some of you guys did go to the actual soldersmoke.com page, so I've seen more dots on the cluster map. Here's something to ask yourself, guys. Why is the big, what's with the big red dot right out in the center of Oz, in the center of Australia? That's got my head scratching a little bit there, but we have almost as many listeners out there as we do in the Australian coastal cities. Go figure. Figure that one out. Any ideas on that, send them my way. But we're happy to see all those red dots out there. There's more of them now in more different locations. There, some more dots showed up in South America. Some more showed up in the Persian Gulf, all across Asia. So we're happy that everybody out there is listening to Solder Smoke. As the spring and summer Hamfest season kicks in, we're looking for correspondents. How about, I think it would be interesting to have somebody who goes to the FLEA at MIT. We've never had a report from there. So maybe if somebody's going to the FLEA at MIT, bring along a recorder and share with us your impressions about that event. I'd really like to go to that one someday. And of course, we'll be looking for somebody from 4 Days in May, maybe the same correspondent we had last year. If you're willing to do it again, old man, send me a note. We'd be delighted. We need somebody to cover it. And last year it was a great job was done. So please think about doing it again. And if there's any Hamfest, we got Ozark Con coming up. We probably need a report from there. So send me a note. You could be duly deputized as the official Solder Smoke correspondent to these great events. All right, Billy's awake. I think Maria's going to get up here in a few minutes, and it's time for breakfast here on a Sunday morning in Rome. 7-3s to all of you, and thanks for listening.